Ladies and gentlemen, please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange conference call. Today's call is being recorded. Now for introductions, I'd like to turn the call over to Ms. Jennifer Chin. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Richard, and welcome everyone to today's WebSphere Support Techno Exchange. My name is Jennifer Chin, and I will be the moderator for this call. This call is being recorded, and early next week, an MP3 file and presentation will be available on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. You may replay it at your convenience. Today's presenter is Aileen Gren. As a member of the WebSphere Commerce Level 2 support team, Aileen is responsible for providing technical assistance to customers using the WebSphere Commerce family of products, from installation and configuration to integration and performance issues. Today's topic is WebSphere Commerce scalability and high availability. The webcast will include a PowerPoint presentation. During the presentation, all lines will be muted. After the presentation, I will ask attendees to answer a few quick questions via e-meeting polling. After that, the lines will open for a question-answer period. If you are not logging on to the e-meeting, you also have the option to access the presentation from the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site by clicking View Presentation link or by going to any IBM.com site and type in 700-7849 in the search box. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Aileen.
Thank you, Jennifer. Let's go to page 2. So here, I've broken down today's agenda into 3 main sections. First, I will spend about 10 minutes or so to introduce and review the relevant terminologies and concepts when dealing with a WebSphere high availability environment. For the second 10 to 15 minutes, I will move on to discuss the uniqueness of clustering a WebSphere commerce application. I will go through the steps of setting up a commerce clustered environment, talk about some of its limitations and how to get around them. Along the way, I will also share best practices and troubleshooting tips when working in such an environment. Then I will spend another 15 minutes or so to talk about some of the more advanced topics, such as session management, cache replication, WAS, global security, migration, and payment manager failover. Lastly, I will leave you with some useful reference links, and then we will open for questions. One more note, today's presentation only covers WebSphere Commerce versions that are based on WAS 5.x, so that means Commerce 5.5, 5.6, and 5.6.1 only. Commerce version 6 high availability is not covered in this presentation. Let's move on to page 3, please. Here is a diagram of a sample WebSphere Commerce high availability environment. You can see here a typical request follows the flow, such as a web client requests a URL in the browser. The request is then routed to the web server over the internet. The web server passes the request to the web server plugin. All the requests must go through the WebSphere plugin first. The WebSphere plugin then examines the URL, verifies the list of hostname aliases from which it will accept traffic based on the virtual host information, and chooses an application server from the cluster to handle the request. The designated application server then processes the request. If the request needs to access the database, the application server will establish a connection with the data source. When the application server finishes processing the request, the JSP generates the HTML, which is then sent back through the WebSphere plugin to the web server. The web server then sends this output page in an HTML format back to the browser. Of course, you can have multiple web servers to handle load balancing, but today's presentation focuses on how the workload management works at the application server level here. In the picture here, you also see the deployment manager pointing at the cluster. It is used to administer the multiple application server nodes. We will talk about exactly how it works in the slides to follow. Page 4, please. So here, let's first take a closer look at a simple WAS-based environment. Let's focus on the application server tier in the middle of this picture. The light blue rectangle is an application server cell. Inside that, the blue shaded rectangle represents a node, which usually corresponds to a physical machine, but it doesn't have to be. Then the purple shaded rectangle inside the node represents an application server JVM. server 1, for example, as it comes by default from the WAS base edition. The app server runs a J2EE application, such as the admin console app. The diagrams in the rest of the presentation use the same convention to illustrate the different objects. That is, light blue denotes itself, the light blue shaded area is a node, and purple is an application server JVM. Other non-app server JVMs will be either white or light blue. Okay, so let's move on to page 5, please. The WAS base contains a J2EE application server. It is an extension of web server's capabilities to handle web application requests, typically using Java technology. An application server makes it possible for a server to generate a dynamic, customized response to a client request. The application server runs J2EE applications, and each one has its own JVM. In a single server edition, all applications should be running under server 1. And server 1 manages the configuration file in the local config repository, and it also manages the running state of objects and services, such as the trace service. For WAS-based edition, it is actually not intended to create multiple application servers or JVM processes under one WAS instance, but obviously, as you see in the later slides, that commerce is actually an exception to the rule. Move on to the next page. So page 6 here, let's look at how system management works in a WAS-based environment. The admin console application manages the config repository on local file system. It can only send system manage requests to server 1, such as stop and starting the applications or change trace strings. It can manage the config files for additional servers, but that is not recommended. WebSphere Commerce, unfortunately, falls into this category as we create a separate WC_instance server to run the Commerce application, and therefore we have to live with some of the limitations that we will address later on. Server 1 cannot send system management requests to other servers such as Commerce, so you must use command line tooling to do any of the following operations, such as start and stop the Commerce server, dynamically set the trace for Commerce server, and, of course, starting and stop the application itself. So page 7, please. Here's a picture of a more complex environment. It is an extension from WAS base, but now there are multiple nodes inside the cell, and there are multiple application servers on each node. These application servers can be grouped together to form a cluster, and they will then be called individual cluster members or clones. Workloads can then be distributed among these cluster members. Each node also contains an additional JVM called Node Agent, which communicates with yet another JVM, the Network Deployment Manager, that controls the master copy of all the configuration information inside the cell. Network Deployment Manager has many short names such as ND, DNGR, DManager, etc. I may use any of these short names for the rest of the presentation. Where there used to be an admin console for each server 1 JVM, now you can go through just one ND admin console to control everything inside the cell. All of these objects mentioned, such as node, DNGR, app server, are part of a cell, but only app servers can be part of a cluster. These are all logical objects, and I will give you the formal definitions on them in the next slide. Let's turn to the next page. So now we're at page 8. Here you see a list of definitions. I have mentioned quite a few of them already up to this point, but now let's formally define them. Configuration repository, or config repository for short, contains the configuration for the processes and J2EE objects running or installed within that instance on the file system. You can go to the WAS install directory /config folder to locate that. On a base edition, this is typically under WebSphere /AppServer, and when you have installed ND, this will be under WebSphere /DeploymentManager /config. Node is a logical grouping of managed servers. It usually corresponds to a physical computer system with a distinct IP host address, a hostname is usually identical to the hostname for the computer by default. A cell is an arbitrary logical grouping of one or more nodes in a WAS distributed network. It is a configuration concept, a way for administrators to logically associate nodes with one another. Administrators define the nodes that make up a cell according to whatever criteria makes sense in their own organizational environment. A cell can have no cluster, one cluster, or multiple. Network Deployment Manager, or NDDMGR, is a server JVM that manages the cell. Federation is the process of moving a node from standalone mode, WAS-based, to a new cell that is managed by Deployment Manager. And clusters are sets of servers that are managed together and participate in workload management. The servers that are members of a cluster can be on different host names, host machines, as opposed to the servers that are part of the same node and must be located on the same host machine. And, of course, cluster member or clone is just an application server JVM inside a cluster. Let's move on to page 9. Here are a couple more concepts and definitions relating to WebSphere scalability and high availability. There are various ways to scale up the basic single machine WebSphere application server system to meet the needs of your organization. Some scaling techniques include load balancer or network dispatcher in previous releases. Load balancer component transparently redirects incoming HTTP requests from web clients to a set of web servers. Although the clients behave as if they're communicating directly with a given web server, the load balancer is actually intercepting all the requests and then distributing them among all the available web servers in the cluster. And this is the web server cluster. The load balancer can provide scalability, load balancing, and failover for the web server. Then there's workload management, or WLM for short. It enables both load balancing and failover, improving the reliability and scalability of applications deployed on the WAS servers. Incoming requests from the client are transparently distributed among the cluster members of an application server. We've covered clusters on the previous slide. Here's just a reminder that cluster members are identical application server copies of each other. You can create all cluster members on the same physical machine or on different ones. Using cluster members can improve the performance of a server, simplify its administration, and enable the use of workload management. Page 10, please. Page 10 here, we look at Network Deployment Manager in more detail. It does not run J2EE applications. It is a central administration tool. ND node contains the master configuration repository, which includes configuration files for all nodes and a collapsed copy of the application gear file. Deployment Manager communicates with node agents on each node in the cell to distribute applications and configuration data and send any system management requests. Next page, please. On page 11 here, we have more details on how ND works. In order for ND to send system management requests to any node in the environment, the node agent must be running. You can start and stop any server or application in the cell and synchronize configuration through the ND and min console. By design, any manual changes made at the node level will be overwritten by the master configuration from ND. And therefore, if you need to make changes to any configuration files, make sure you always do it at the cell level, which is on ND. Next page, please. On this slide and the next one, we will compare and contrast the pros and cons of the two options for clustering. Page 12 here looks at vertical clustering. This is where you would create multiple cluster members on the same physical machine. This option will give you increased processing power efficiency. Usually, a single JVM process on a physical machine does not fully utilize the processing power of a very good machine, and creating additional JVM processes will provide you multiple thread pools, each corresponding to the JVM process associated with the app server process, and this correspondence avoids concurrency limitations and lets the application server use the full processing power of the machine. Vertical scaling also provides the load balancing among the cluster members, and it provides JVM process failover. So if one app server instance goes offline, the other instance on the machine continues to process client requests. However, the physical machine, in this case, could become a single point of failure, and if it goes down, so does your entire site. Next page. On page 13 here, we look at horizontal scaling to avoid physical machine being a single point of failure. This is where you would create multiple web cluster members spanning across multiple physical machines. And this option will give you all the benefits that vertical scaling provides, the increased processing power, load balancing, process failover, and now you have failover for physical hardware as well. Page 14, please. Here, I am showing you a view from my NDMin console where I've set up a horizontal clustered environment. My cell and cluster topology is fully expanded here. The cell name is Eileen GU Network, and you can see that from the upper left corner. It has one cluster member called WSI Cluster on the right-hand side, where the cluster members are distributed onto two nodes, Goro 2 and Salmon. Goro 2 contains two cluster members, each named Goro 2 and WC underscore demo underscore Goro 2, and similarly you can see the other two clones that reside on node Salmon. Moving on to page 15, several people have asked me in the past why you want to federate a commerce node into an ND cell rather than just keeping it as a standalone node and cell. That is why I'm listing a few advantages of federation here. For one, since commerce application does not run on server 1 and server 1 does not communicate with the commerce instance server, in a WAS-based environment, the customer cannot use the WAS, server 1 WAS admin console to start and stop commerce application, commerce server, or dynamically set trace specifications without having to restart the server. But WAS does provide a command line tool to set these dynamic properties. Here I'm giving you an example on how to set these in a on a single server environment. More details can be found on how to configure tracing on a runtime server at the tech note that I provided here also. Page 16. Here I'm showing you a view from WAS admin console on a standalone base environment. Notice the WC demo server status is shown as unavailable. And that is because WAS server 1 does not know how to talk to the commerce server. And on page 17, however, here you see a view from the ND admin console where the commerce node has been federated and now the commerce server status becomes available because ND knows how to communicate with all the nodes inside a cell and control any objects on that node. Page 18 here is another view from a standalone WAS admin console showing you only the configuration tab available when you configure tracing, and this means any changes made here after being saved will only take effect once the application server is restarted. On page 19, however, here is a contrast view from ND admin console where the commerce node has been federated and now you see the runtime tab becoming available to you and any changes you make here as soon as you save it will take effect without having to restart the commerce server. This will be extremely handy when you debug a problem on a production environment. Once you set this on the runtime tracing, you won't have to incur any downtime just because you want to do more troubleshooting here. And on page 20, now before I get into the implementation details on how to set up, configure, and maintain a commerce clustered environment, I want to explain a very important concept, and that is collapsed versus expanded year. An expanded year is a folder or directory on the file system that contains your application binaries. These files are used at runtime by the application server to load and execute your application. The typical structure looks like this. Under WebSphere, App Server, Installed Apps, Cell Name, and the Commerce Instance.year. And inside the Commerce Instance year, you would see your web modules, and your JSPs are inside the web module, and of course you have your EJB module. the wet modules are expanded in the directory structure listed above. The EJB modules, however, are not expanded. They remain in the jar file. The WebSphere Commerce tooling, such as Store Publish, will add new assets into the expanded year directory. There is no expanded year on ND, keep that in mind, and changes made in the installed apps directory here are ignored by the distribution process, which we will talk in more detail later on. Page 21. Now we look at the Collapseer. The Collapseer is a single file that is used by the deployment manager to manage the application. It can be considered the master copy of the application. When distributing the application throughout the cell, the deployment manager will use this year file. And the path to it is under the WAS install directory, config, cells, cell name, application, commerce, instance, year directory, and then there's a single file underneath there called commerce-instance.year again. And this year is stored as a single archive file as described by the J2EE specification. In addition to the class year, there is some additional configuration information that is stored outside of the year file itself. For example, the configuration as to where data source is used for EJB modules, or the virtual host definitions for the web modules. These data metadata files are in the in this directory under the application commerce application year. You see a deployment folder, and under there you see the WC underscore instance name. Under this directory, you will see a subdirectory for each module within your application. The configuration for each module is stored here. There's a copy of the Collapseer on both ND and base, so that is at both the node level and at the cell level. The initial commerce Collapseer is created after instance creation, and if it is not manually updated, it will not contain any subsequent changes you make to the expanded year. Store Publishing, for example, only updates the expanded year. When you federate the commerce node, only the collapsed year at the time is sent to ND to be stored as the master copy. When ND resyncs with the node, it sends this master copy of the collapsed year to each node and extends it into the expanded year location, overriding everything in your installed apps year directory with information contained inside the collapsed year. So as you can see, if this collapsed year is not kept up to date, and when ND does a resync with all the nodes using this old version of the collapsed year, you risk losing changes you just made to the runtime extended year. Ouch, that could hurt. But don't worry, we will talk about how we may be able to avoid this and how you can keep the collapsed and extended year in sync in the later slides. Moving on to next page, 22, please. Now let's do a quick review. When working in a highly available commerce environment, you must be very clear about these important concepts. One common misunderstanding is that cell equals cluster. That is not the case. Cell contains many logical objects. ND is a JVM that manages a master copy or cell level configuration, which contains a collapsed copy of the year, commerce year. The file system view is under the deployment manager slash config folder. Each node also has a node-level config repository, which also contains a copy of the collapsed commerce year. On the file system, you go to the from base WebSphere slash app server slash config directory to find them. At the node level, also locates the runtime binaries or the extended commerce year, which is under the app server installed apps, etc. directory. There are many JVMs involved at different scopes or levels. Deployment manager, node agent, server 1, WC underscore instance, and other JVMs you may create. For example, a new JVM you could create to act as a replicator. We could talk about that also later on in the more advanced topic. When troubleshooting issues in such an environment, you also need to look at several logs from many JVMs. And on the right-hand side here, we see Cluster is a group of application servers, or JVMs, participating in workload management. A cluster member can be from any node, and there may be 0, 1, or many clusters in the cell. Also keep in mind that because Deployment Manager is not an application server that runs any J2EE applications, it is a JVM that only manages the object inside the cell. Therefore, ND is not part of a cluster, so it does not affect workload management at production runtime. In other words, ND does not need to be running in order for the individual app server cluster members to handle production traffic and user requests. Of course, without ND, you will lose the ability to administer and synchronize objects inside the cell from a central admin console. Also, one common misconception is that many people think that federation equals clustering. This is not true either. Remember, federation is the process of adding a new node into the cell, whereas clustering is the process of creating a new cluster and then add more app server cluster members into it so they can participate in workload management. True, you must federate first in order to cluster, but you do not have to cluster after federation. Some users just prefer to have the convenience of using ND and min consoles to manage the many objects in the cell, but does not necessarily require any JVM failover, for example, and load balancing. So therefore, federation and clustering are two very different processes. Many people often interchange these terminologies, but it is extremely helpful if you clearly understand the differences when working in a complex and highly scaled commerce environment. Moving on to page 23. Now, I will take you through an exercise of actually setting up a Webster Commerce clustered environment. Keep in mind that most of the generic steps are documented in the Commerce Install Guide, and there is also a very good white paper which documents in great detail the step-by-step to set up a Commerce version 5.5 cluster on a three-tier Unix environment. I have included a link to it in the reference section at the end of the presentation, but here I provide you with the overall procedure with explanations on how some of the steps work underneath the cover, and it also provides several hands-on tips from my past experience of setting up Commerce clusters for various versions on various platforms. I will not go into great details on all the steps, but I will point out instructions and hands-on tips that are not documented in the aforementioned two documents, the install guide and then the white paper. Okay, let's begin. This page contains an overview of the steps. I start with one node, call it node 1, install Commerce and WAS-based software stack, and apply the latest fix pack, WAS-based and Commerce. You will then create a Commerce instance, publish store, deploy customization, and tune your JVM, all done to this one single node environment. For a horizontally clustered environment, you would then install Commerce and WAS-based on the second machine or multiple machines in parallel. Note on the second node or any additional nodes, there is no need to create Commerce instance again. Then you install WAS-ND and apply the latest fix pack for ND. You may install ND on the app server machine, but it's usually recommended that you use a dedicated physical machine for ND, so it does not compete for system resources with the application server. Remember, because ND is only a logical object inside the cell and not part of the cluster, which participate in workload management, the DMGR JVM does not need to be running in order for the individual app server cluster members to serve production traffic and user requests. Next, you would federate the first node, create a cluster with the WC instance server from the first node, and federate additional nodes and add additional cluster members, and you would then also set up web server clusters and load balancer. So this is a quick overview of all the steps, and on page 24 and the next couple of slides, I will describe in somewhat more detail for some of the steps. So again, you just install WAS, base, apply the latest fix pack, create a Commerce instance, optionally publish a store, and deploy customization. And the idea here is that you want to make as many changes to the ear, to the expanded ear, as possible at this stage before federation, if possible. And when you install ND on a separate machine, as recommended, one more tip here is to keep in mind that you want to make sure ND fixed pack is always at a higher or equal level as the WASP base. Otherwise, you could run into some headaches later on. And when you federate into ND, what happens underneath the cover is that this process removes the admin console application from server 1. It moves all configuration files into the master configuration repository on ND, except some cell level configurations such as virtual host. It takes the original collapsed ear, send it to ND node, and at this stage, unfortunately, any changes in the expanded ear that you made after instance creation are not propagated to ND. We will talk about how you can make them in sync and how you can get this more updated copy of the collapsed ear to ND. We could talk about that in the later slides. And one more tip here is also when you run the at node command, you want to increase the heap size to approximately half a gig for the command. Otherwise, you could run into out-of-memory issues. And the syntax for running this at node command is you got to be as root, run it under the app server, WebSphere app server bin directory. You issue the command at node.sh. You give it the parameter, tell it where the deployment manager host name is, use the fully qualified host name. Use the SOAP port. That's where how the node age how this app server talks to the ND through SOAP. You specify minus include apps, and that says to give ND your copy, the base copy of the collapsed ear. And you always want to add a minus trace at the very end, so in case this process fails, this federation stage fails, you would have a lot more information in the at node.log, which you would look at for troubleshooting later on. Some common problems with federation is that there's certain ports that the nodes and deployment manager communicate with each other on, and you need to make sure that the firewall is open for those ports. You could potentially run into synchronization issues. Some ear size could be too big, and if your network is not too fast, you could potentially run into network timeout issues. And moving on to page 25, continue on. After federation, you would run the commerce command, create virtual host, from the commerce bin directory to recreate the commerce instance virtual host. And a tip here is, as a prerequisite, DMGR and node agent must be running as the script updates the virtual host XML file on the deployment manager config repository. If this tool fails, then you may also delete and recreate the virtual host definition from ND and min console directly after. That is an option to you. After this, you could, on a Unix environment, you need to run the WC non-root script to correct the permission. You can also change the process execution user ID for the node agent, server 1, commerce instance server on Unix, from root to non-root to be owned by non-root user. And you can follow the TechNode link that I gave you here if you want to have ND being owned by the non-root user as well. Next, you go on to the stage of preparing additional nodes in your horizontal cluster. You want to keep the same install path as the original system from first node. And when you federate additional nodes into the ND, you don't need to do the minus include apps again for when you run the at node command, because you've already have a master copy at the cell level from the first node, and so therefore there's no need to send additional copy of the same application to ND again. And after that, you can create a new cluster in the WASM min console, which contains the original commerce application server. One more tip here is that when you create this cluster, just to save time later on, you can choose to create a replication domain associated with it as well, but do not create the application replicator entry within the same JVM as the app server. We'll talk about why in the later events section. Page 26 here. When you create additional servers in the cluster based on the original Commerce application server, one tip is to, before you add additional cluster member, consider making as many configuration changes as you need to the template application server, so subsequently added cluster members automatically inherit its configurations, for example, the JVM tuning parameters for one. After that, you would then need to manually copy file assets that are not distributed by WAS. And these are the commerce/instances directory or any changes you made to the expanded year post-instance creation. And we can talk about further on how to best distribute these changes later on. Additional configuration changes if necessary, such as moving certain configurations from a server scope to a cell scope if it's applicable. You want to also configure session persistence if necessary, install the cache monitor and set up cache replication. And after you're satisfied with all your configuration changes, you regen the plugin and start your new cluster and make sure test your failover and functionality. When testing failover, you can start one cluster member at a time and make sure you can access the Commerce application. So, page 27. Now that we have a fully functional Commerce cluster, we can further discuss how we may need to configure and deploy ear updates and maintain such an environment. Before we get into the best practices on those, we need to understand a bit more on exactly how ND synchronizes with the nodes. There are several levels and options of synchronization. Startup synchronization, auto sync, full resync, and application distribution. We'll discuss each of them in the next few slides. Page 28 here. First thing first, before synchronization can happen, you must ensure that the node agents are running. And, of course, deployment manager is also running so they can communicate with each other. Here I show you a view from the NDMin console where you go to the system administration node agents and make sure that the status for each one is green, meaning they're available. Note that you must initially start a node agent outside of the NDMin console using the start node command. You may stop the node agent from ND, NDMin console, but you cannot restart it from here. You can only start the node agent from command line. Page 29. Then you can check the system from system administration node agent nodes page to see if the individual nodes are in sync with the deployment manager. Here in this picture, the node Eileen GU manager, which is the deployment manager node, is shown as being in sync, whereas the other two nodes, 402 and Salmon, are out of sync. You may have also noticed the buttons above that read synchronize and full resynchronize. Yes, you can manually synchronize from this page, but you need to first understand the implication of each synchronization option, which we will talk about now. Page 30. To see a full list of different synchronization options from the NDMin console, you can go to System Administration, Node Agents, Node Agent Server, File Synchronization Services. Here we see that first thing, startup at top specifies whether the node agent JVM will attempt to start the file synchronization service when it starts up. By default, this is enabled. It does not cause a file synchronization operation to start. It simply starts the synchronization service, not the operation. Synchronization interval is the interval at which node agent will contact the deployment manager to see if anything on the node is out of sync. If so, deployment manager will attempt to synchronize node with the master configuration based on the various options users have defined. Default is 1 minute. The minimum value that the app server uses is 1. If you specify a value of 0, the app server just ignores it and uses default 1. automatic synchronization. If this option is selected, DMGR will attempt to sync the node at the set interval. If it is not enabled, DMGR will still check for anything out of sync, but will not do anything afterwards. This option by default is enabled, and remove this check mark if you want to control when files are sent to the node. Startup synchronization, if it is enabled, will sync the config repository before starting up any other JVM on the node, including the Commerce instance app server. By default, this option is disabled. Enabling this, however, ensures that the node agent has the latest configuration but increases the amount of time it takes to start the application server. And note that this setting has no effect on the start server command. The start server launches the server directly and does not use the node agent. Exclusions field gives you the option to exclude any config files from being synchronized. The default is to have nothing, but to specify a file, you can use a complete name or a name with a leading or trailing asterisk for a wildcard. There's one more synchronization option, if you recall from the previous node's display page on the previous slide, that there were two synchronization buttons, synchronization and full resync. Synchronization says it sends a request that a node synchronization operation is to be performed using the normal synchronization optimization algorithm. This operation is fast, but might not fix problems from manual file edits that occur on the node. So it is still possible for the node and cell configuration to be out of sync after this operation is performed. I have seen this happen in several cases before where I manually edit the plugin config XML from the file system on ND, which, by the way, is actually a required part of the Commerce Federation procedure. And after that, when I just do the select the synchronize button, I don't always see the plugin config XML file on my node level being in sync. Now, if you want to keep everything completely in sync and ensure no mismatch, you use the full resynchronization option. What it does is it clears all the synchronization optimization settings and performs a configuration synchronization from scratch, meaning that ND does not check for any mismatch. It simply pushes the master config repository to the node, whether there's a mismatch or not. And this, of course, ensures that the node and cell level repository after the synchronization process will match. However, this operation usually takes a bit longer than the synchronization operation, and especially if ear distribution is enabled, which we will talk about on the next slide. Page 31. Recall that the collapsed ear is inside the config repository. File system directory located for this DMGR is on the config application, commerce server ear, and then there's a single file called commerce instance ear. Therefore, the collapsed ear is also part of the configuration that could be out of sync. That is, if the node level collapsed ear and the cell level collapsed ear are different for some reason, and when the enable distribution is selected, as seen from this screenshot here, ND will send the master cell copy of the collapsed ear to the node and expand the ear, overriding what's in the current installed apps or expanded ear directory. That was the risk I talked about earlier, and here is where you could avoid this by disabling the enable distribution option. However, on the flip side, if you disable this option, you will also lose the flexibility of using ND to distribute ear changes onto other nodes automatically. This option is very handy when you need to deploy ear updates onto many nodes. Therefore, my recommendation is that you should be aware of how synchronization works, what options are available to you, and which part of the configuration can be synchronized. As we have seen from the previous slides, there are several levels of control here. You can synchronize everything in the config repository, or everything except some files, or accept the ear application, and you select the best option that suits your need. However, I recommend that you always keep the collapsed ear and expanded ear in sync so you do not risk accidentally wiping out changes to the runtime binary files. Page 32. Now let's talk about the uniqueness of commerce and limitations when we work with within such an environment. First of all, commerce is not a standalone ear. There are many assets that are outside of commerce application ear. There are both the WAS install directory and the commerce install directory. You must install commerce on each node in the cluster to ensure that file assets outside of the ears are available. You need to copy commerce configuration files to each node in a horizontally scaled environment. One other limitation with commerce federated or clustered environment is that some commerce scripts do not know how to dynamically look up the node and cell name. And these include the config end, sysdeploy, autodeploy, etc. Commerce ear file is dynamic. Store, publish, file upload, etc. will add and change files in your expanded ear, and these files must be manually synchronized within the cluster. And changes are lost when you export the ear. They're lost when you do a full resynchronization. There's a risk of you losing that. And some of the solutions that have been proposed include make changes only to the config repository, master config repository. You can disable auto distribution. You can always do the manual distribution. But before you pick any of these options, you should consider these very carefully with your requirements, and if it's your goal to minimize downtime or to avoid losing changes or to minimize the complexity of the administration, et cetera, there are many, many factors that you need to consider first. And on the next slide here, options to distribute ear changes. Updates to commerce expanded ear after instance creation is very common, like I said. Store publish, code deployment, including adding new JSPs, EJBs, applying fixed pack, commerce fixed pack and APAR, and even when configuring cache spec XML. They all make changes to your expanded ear. And when you select the best option to distribute ear change, you need to consider system availability, ear size, or complexity. And based on these, we'll talk about the pros and cons of each of the proposed solutions here. Using a shared file system where all nodes share the same expanded ear location, so there is no need to distribute the change from node to node. The pro, of course, is less administration overhead, but disadvantage here is that you now have a single point of failure, and it kind of defeats the purpose of having multiple app servers as backup for each other. And another option of manual distribution. You can manually copy the expanded ear assets only from node to node. And advantage here is that it is still relatively easy task and requiring you to only tar and untar some the directories and files. And this is the way actually we document in the install guide today. But the disadvantage is that the end user may not have access to the file system, say a developer, for example, and not a sys administrator, or they may not know that it's necessary to do this type of manual distribution. The third option here is what I usually recommend to most customers, is that you keep the collapsed and expanded ear in sync and you distribute them through ND. So you let ND handle all the work, and it is usually faster than manual distribution, especially if you have many, many nodes in the cell. And of course, one potential disadvantage with this approach is that if the ear file is too large and network is not very fast, the time it takes for ND to push down all the changes could increase as well. However, it is still recommended for most customers, just because it is still worthwhile to take a few extra minutes of downtime over the risk of losing your changes in the expanded ear. Page 34, please. So here, I document the steps of updating the ear using the third option, and that is let ND synchronize the changes within the node. a white paper with an illustrated example and full steps in the works, is in the works and should be published soon, but here's a sneak preview. In order to use this process, you must first ensure that synchronization service and ear distribution options are enabled, as we talked about from the previous slides, 27 through 31. First, it is recommended that you shut down the cluster while deploying the ear change, but you don't need to if you're only adding JSPs. Rule of thumb here is that if it requires you to bounce the commerce server on a standalone environment when you deploy the new assets, then the cluster needs to be also shut down for the same assets deployment. For example, deploying new EJBs or making changes to any deployment descriptors in the config repository, you unfortunately will need to restart commerce server. You then update, so you first update the expanded copy of the ear on node 1. For the audience that if you are looking, you might be looking at an older version of the PDF. If in the instruction it says collapsed copy, that is actually a mistake. I apologize for that. It should be updating the expanded copy of the ear on node 1. And second step then is you would, after you make all the changes to the expanded copy, you use the ear expander script to collapse this ear from a node, and then you put this collapsed ear on deployment manager, and you use full resynchronize and let nd distribute changes to all the nodes. And one more tip here is that if you want to minimize downtime, you may also prepare the collapsed ear from a non-production environment where the code level is the same, and you can then port over that collapsed ear to production. Page 35. Again, here are some sample scenarios where ear updates need to be distributed. We've covered SOAR publish and custom code deployment already, so I want to point out the recommend strategy for applying commerce fixed pack in a federated or clustered environment is to apply Commerce APAR or FixPack to the Commerce install directory, so that's the WebSphere Commerce server directory on all the nodes, and then you apply Commerce APAR or FixPack to the WAS installed apps directory on one node only. Then you collapse this ear and let ND distribute the ear across the cell using the instructions I outlined in the previous slide. One known issue when you apply Commerce FixPack is that the some scripts look in the product.xml for hostnames, and they always assume the hostname is the default. The cell name is the default hostname. There's a tech note actually documenting how you can get around it if you run into this issue. Page 36. This is the best slide in the whole presentation. Is if you whenever you work with in a highly scaled commerce environment, always back up everything as much as you can. And to do this, you can use the backup config sh utility from WAS. You should back up the expanded ear, and if you have enough hard drive space, back up your WebSphere directory, never hurts. And, of course, the commerce instance name directory is also very important to back up. Page 37 here, a few more tips on when you were working in a commerce clustered environment is, again, always keep the collapsed and expanded ear in sync. And I often get asked, you know, how you tell which application server is serving the request. There are several ways to find out. You can put some of the snippets here that I provided in your JSP. You can enable trace in the plugin, and then you look in the plugin trace log, and that'll tell you which app server is which app server is serving the request. Or a quick way to also find out is by looking at the JSession ID, which contains the clone ID that's defined from the plugin config XML. You can show cookie and look at that JSession ID. Page 38, here are some troubleshooting tips on several different stages when you are working in a clustered environment. when you are setting things up, you could run into issues with federation, and if you do, like I talked about earlier, always use the minus trace option. And when you need to open a PMR and report the problem, you want to describe fully the desired topology and what you have set up so far. One handy tool to use from WAS is a collector script that collects all the essential OS information, your WAS config repository, the logs, and make sure you run this from all the nodes and the deployment manager. So you get a full picture of the overall topology. And sometimes if failover is not working in your clustered environment, you want to first check synchronization, make sure your node agents are running, deployment manager is running, that the nodes are in sync. And if you've checked all that and still things are not really working, then use the WAS must gather to collect a few traces. And then open the PMR, of course, if you want. You can look into the IHS and plugin trace and systemout.log. Those should also contain clues for you. Page 39. I've written down a few event topics here, as you can see, that each topic could probably take up an hour-long presentation for its, you know, on its own. And given the limited amount of time we have today, I won't go into too much implementation details, but I will try to give you an overview of some of the things you need to be aware of when you work with these advanced topics. So here we'll talk about session management, caching and global security, migration, and payment manager failover. Page 40, session management. If the application is deployed in multiple servers, which is the case with commerce clustering, the application can direct the user to any one of the servers. If the user starts on server 1 and comes in on server 2 a little later, this transition should be seamless to him and the user should not lose his session information. Therefore, the app servers need to have a way to persist this user session data with each other. WAS provides several options to achieve this. Number one, session affinity. It works by caching the session objects in the server instance of the application with which a user is interacting. If the user starts on server 1 for the first request, then for every successive request, the user is directed back to server 1, and server 1 has to look only in the cache to get the session information. If server 1 goes down for some reason, then the other app servers must pick up the slack and they need a way to retrieve the user's session information. And there are two ways to do this. One is you can use a session database where all user sessions are stored and all app servers read from the same database when it's trying to serve a request. B, memory-to-memory replication, where the session object is replicated to all cluster members and it is stored in the JVM heap. This is a WAS way of managing session, which uses the JSession ID and storing the session information in the HTTP session, but JSession ID is actually not encrypted, so there could be a potential security exposure. By default, WebSphere Commerce implements its own session management where browser passes cookies to app server for each request. The cookie stores all the necessary session information, and there is no need for app servers to persist the user session object anymore in this case because the cookies are being sent every time. Commerce also encrypts the session information, so it is more secure than the JSession ID. However, in order to use the Commerce session management, the browser client must accept cookies, but this is typically the case today anyhow. So page 41. Here are some points to keep in mind when installing Cache Monitor in the clustered Commerce environment. It is slightly different from when you install Cache Monitor in just a standalone single node environment. In a clustered environment, you will need to configure each application server to have its own cache monitor. If the cache monitor is tied to a web server, then you will not know which clone's cache you're monitoring. To enable you to access the cache monitor through the application server directly, create a new virtual host, such as cache monitor. This host, virtual host will have a host alias for each cluster member. And to identify the port being used by the given cluster member, you expand the servers in the left panel in your admin console. You click on server and for the pick your server. And for the corresponding cluster member, you click on web container and then HTTP transport, and you note that port number assigned to the container. And by default, they're usually in the range of 9081, 9082, and increment from each other. And for example, here I list two links to the cache monitor for each one of my cluster members in my cluster. That HTTP cluster member host name, port 9081, HTTP, which is HTTP transport / cache monitor, and 9082 for the other one. And also remember that, keep in mind that the cache monitor, when you install it, it needs to map to the application server cluster and use the new virtual host created. Page 42 here. In a clustered environment, it is advisable to set up cache replication policy as shared push so that any newly generated cache entries can be shared among the cluster members, and any invalidation of a cache entry from one cluster member is automatically propagated to other ones. Now, there are different options that you can use to share information across the cluster using shared push and shared push pull. And so far, the recommendation from Commerce is to use shared push. When you create the Commerce cluster, you pick the option to create the replication domain, but do not create the replicator entry within the cluster member's JVM because the replicator will compete for JVM heap space and contribute to heap fragmentation inside the app server JVM and could potentially cause core dumps when it attempts to replicate large DRS objects across the cluster. So you need to tune your cache size carefully. The recommendation from WAS is to create a separate JVM for each replicator and have one replicator serve 2 to 4 cluster members. A replicator JVM requires between 256 megabytes to half a gig heap size for 2 to 3 cache instances. Of course, as with any performance tuning advice, you need to keep in mind that one size never fits all, and you need to diligently go through several iterations of load tests, collect the performance data, analyze them, make appropriate changes based on the results that you've observed, and go through the cycle of load test and performance tuning again. Page 43. In a live production environment, it is a good idea to protect access to your NDMin console. One way to do this is by enabling global security. But like with any feature, there could be a potential performance trade-off that you need to pay. Global security enables Java 2 and server-level security by default, so it could severely impact performance for up to 20%, according to some WAS documentation. So therefore, the recommendation is to either configure firewall rules to protect access or disable server-level security at the least. One more thing here to note is that out of the box, Commerce supports turning on global security only after you've created the instance and federation. So if you need to use the config manager to create instance again, say in an environment that you create multiple instances, you will need to turn off global security temporarily, or there is APAR also available, but you will need to call IBM support first to request them. Page 44. Here we touch a little bit on migration. when migrating from a previous Commerce version that is based on a WAS version prior to version 5, there are a few things that are very different from a multi-node perspective. So on WAS Commerce 5.1 and 5.4, there is no concept of deployment manager. So you would need to, generally the process is to migrate one node first from the older Commerce version onto a new one, and go through the process of set up your cluster environment on a new environment, some typically in a coexistence mode, and you got to be careful of port conflicts, and then you fully test the, for example, the 5.6 or 5.6.1 clustered environment. Thorough test rehearsal is a key to this. Page 46. Some customers have asked about payment manager failover. Fortunately, there is no clustering support for the Commerce payment application. Only one payment manager is supported per Commerce server or Commerce cluster, but we do support cold standby for payment manager that you can create, where you can create multiple payment instances pointing to the same payment database, but they cannot, unfortunately, be hot standby for each other. Okay, so on page 46, this actually brings me to the end of the presentation. I hope that you found the presentation useful in helping you to understand more on how a highly scaled Commerce environment works, and here I will leave you with a list of some useful reference links. And on page 47, this chart includes links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. DeveloperWorks offers in-depth technical information. The events link on support pages point you to webcasts and conference information. Visit the WebSphere.org for user group support and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up the learning curve quickly. The ESR tool is available to Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. And the My Support link on all product support pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products of interest to you. At this point, I will turn it back to our moderator, Jennifer. Thanks, Jen. It's all yours now.
Thank you, Aileen, for a great presentation. Hi, I'm Richard. Can we open up the lines for questions?
Sure thing. And if you would like to ask a question today, please press *1 on your touchtone telephone at this time. And if you're on a speakerphone, make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, *1 for questions today, and we will pause for just a moment to allow everyone a chance to signal. Well, first, Abhinav.
Aileen, I have a question about the thing that you had on page 34.
Okay, so let me quickly go to that page here. Right, yep.
Okay, we were discussing on page 34 about the ear expander.
Okay.
Now, this is a two-part question. One would be, if the development team comes to me with a new ear file, okay?
Right.
Something that has new JSPs or some kind of updates to it that they want deployed to production.
Mm-hmm.
Now, would that information be in the expanded ear file?
When I think that information you need to first clarify with your developer is that where did they make the change directly to. Typically, they would probably just make changes to the installed app directory, which is the expanded ear.
Okay.
Right? And then it depends on whose responsibility it is to collapse the ear. Right? Either they could use this ear extender script and collapse the year themselves and give you, I assume you are the system administrator?
Yes.
Right? Responsible for deploying the year, right? So either your developer could use this script to collapse the year and then only give you that one year file, and then you can go on to just put that on the deployment manager and let ND sync with the rest of the nodes, or depends on your business process, you could also run this year expander script yourself.
Okay, now when we come to that ear expander, it is only just going to collapse the ear. It's not going to put it on the deployment manager. It's not going to deploy it.
No. That part is a manual access. So actually, yeah, that's a very good question. Thanks for bringing it up. I can quickly go into the syntax of ear expander, okay? So if you look at the syntax here, so ear expander, then you specify the parameter minus ear, and you give it a temporary path, okay? So this is a temporary directory where you want the collapsed ear to reside on. And, of course, you know, I wouldn't recommend you point this to the deployment manager collapsed ear directory. Always use a temporary path. And then the next parameter, minus operation dir, this is the actual full path to your expanded ear. Right, so as you can see, it's following the pattern of WebSphere app server installed apps, cell name, your WC underscore instance dot ear. Remember, this is a directory, so that's your expanded ear directory. And the ear expander, what it does is it basically takes everything inside this directory and compress them and put them in a package in the ear format for you.
So then I can take that ear file, which was collapsed, and then do a hot deploy or a deployment by stopping and starting?
Exactly. Depends on what exactly is the new assets that were updated.
Right. So this looks more like a developer thing, where he would give me a complete ear file.
Yeah, I think that's between you and the developer, that you guys can decide whoever is best to do this task. Sometimes it would require them to have access to your file system.
Right.
You can do this as WAS user if you've changed some of the permissions, but by default, I think this bin directory is owned by root.
Right.
So if they don't have root access, then it might be a little bit challenging for them.
Okay. Thanks.
No problem.
We'll go next to Thomas Schneider.
Hey, Elaine. This is Tom. Just a suggestion for you and your troubleshooting tips.
Certainly.
Customers tend to like to run the ND manager on smaller systems. So if you federate to a ND manager that doesn't have a lot of resources on it,
mm-hmm.
on the server, you want to increase the connection IO timeout in the server.xml for the ND manager to about 1200 to 1800 to
mm-hmm.
avoid synchronization errors during federation. It also avoids synchronization errors otherwise as well.
Right, exactly. That's actually a very good suggestion. Common. Sometimes it could be a common issue with the network timeout. Yeah.
Yep. So, and I actually have a document written up for this. If you want me, I can send you the link to it.
Yeah, that would be perfect. But
all right.
Okay, actually, yeah, please do that. And what I'll do is I'll add it into my presentation, and I'll publish a new copy of the PDF later.
Okay,
thank you very much.
Yeah. We'll go next to Chaitanya Virapane.
Hey, Edwin.
Hi, Chaitanya.
Hi. I have a question about the shared push-pull policy. When I ask for the PMR, they recommend to have a push-pull policy, and when you suggest for this shared push-pull, what exactly is the difference going to be?
Right. It's a good question, actually. Like I said, there are many different options with how you can propagate the change across your cluster. One fundamental difference with the shared push and pull. Shared push says that in your JVM, it's going to talk about the different Java objects inside your JVM. And in particular, I think you're most interested in the cache objects, right?
Yes.
Okay. So your cache objects are stored in this in a fast hash map table, all right, initially. When they are ready for, when DRS is ready to replicate this change, what it does is it takes these objects, and actually from WAS 502.10 and later, DRS takes about 2% of your total cache size, okay? It copies them out into, DRS copies it out and tries to, and serializes these objects, 2% of it, okay? And then it gives this serialized object to the replicator. And based on the replication policy that you set, if you set as shared push, then this will be pushing out the actual entire, the cache entries, 2% of your total cache entries in memory, okay, to the other cluster members. Now, shared pull says that when you initially generate your cache entry, you only broadcast about so shared push is when you broadcast the changes to your cache entry. Shared push pull is you and then you replicate that cache entry to all your cluster members. Shared push pull says you maintain this cache entry in your own JVM for now, but you will broadcast the cache IDs to your cluster members, right? So the DRS will then, in that case, if you use shared push-pull, will only generate objects for the cache IDs instead of the entire cache entry. And as you can see, that the cache IDs usually is much, much smaller in size than the cache entry itself.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, it's star one for questions. We'll go next to Alan Tsang.
Hello. Regarding the cold standby, is there any additional documentation on this particular configuration, like assisting in starting it up when one of them goes down, or location of the particular server? Can it be co-located with one of the commerce server, or should it be offloaded? Is there any additional document on this?
In terms of documentation, no, not really, unfortunately. All we document is that, unfortunately, Payment Manager is not clusterable, and you may create multiple instances, but you cannot have a hot standby for them. But our recommendation is generally that you want to probably separate your commerce and payment instance onto separate machines. Now, Alan, actually, if you're more interested in this topic, we can certainly take it offline and talk about that, as we're kind of running out of time with this presentation. You have my contact information. You know,
yes,
what?
I do.
Yeah, we can talk about that after.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And we'll take our final question today from Rich Wunsch.
Hi, Eileen.
Hi.
This is Rich Wunsch. I have a question on the global security.
Yes.
In the WAS admin console, you can choose LocalOS, LDAP, or custom.
Mm-hmm.
In the commerce documentation, you have to go to the configuration manager, and there is no option for custom. Is there not a way to use a custom registry for enabling global security?
In terms of enabling that, I think there are multiple locations. You're right. There are multiple locations that you need to go to configure that, one from the config manager and also one from the admin console. Most of the instructions, I believe, I think it's documented in our info center,
yes.
Right? And what we can do is let's also get together after the presentation,
okay.
And I'll take a look at your set up your environment today.
Okay.
And what you need to achieve. Basically, you're saying you need a custom registry, right? Not the LDAP.
Right.
Yeah, it's going to probably take a little bit more work. I will give you some more details afterwards.
Okay.
Okay?
Thanks,
Rich.
And ladies and gentlemen, at this time, I'd like to turn the call back over to Ms. Jennifer Chin for any closing remarks.
At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation, patience, and understanding. Remember, a replay of this presentation will be available on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site early next week, as well as information on future presentations. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Aileen, for presenting today.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
And ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude our teleconference for today. We thank you for your participation once again, and you may disconnect at this time.